Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 343 for March 21st, 2018. Meet the Simplexton. Hi, everybody. It's K9EID. Yep, I'm in a different place again. You're watching Ham Nation and listening to our podcast, I do hope. We've got a really super show tonight, some very interesting things. And I want you to stick around because we've got a group from down in Tennessee, and they're called the Simplexton. Simplexton. This club only works simplex, and it's pretty darn cool. Mount Juliet Simplex Society. And Paul's going to be with us and tell us all about it. We'll get some great pictures of different things they're doing. But I want to bring more activity to the simplex part of 2 meters. That's where the three guys you see here on the screen tonight, that's where we grew up on 2 meters, was on simplex and still doing it. But that's going to be good. Valerie is not with us because she's like a little headache tonight. So we're going to have some great video from her. She's going to show you. And this is a big deal that you get a lot of questions. People want to know, I got this micro ham keyer. Now what do I do? She's going to show you how to hook it up, which is going to be really good. Don's got Dr. T and all that. Let's go see what everybody is doing. So here we go. Don, how are you doing, buddy? Everything okay?
Yeah, awesome. Hey, look, I dug out the vintage shirt from 2013 tonight because, well, it was clean and it was early in the morning and, it was right there. I could see it and put it on. So, everything is great. Want to say hello to our WTWW shortwave listeners at 5085 and over in Africa at 12.105. We're worldwide tonight on WTWW as usual. If you've got something ham radio related that you'd like to share with him, email at WTWW.us. Amateur Radio Newsline played on WTWW, some great country music. Ted Randall does an absolute wonderful job. And they've got some guy named Bob who plays organ apparently every now and then. So there you go.
Okay, yeah, it's great. That's wonderful, wonderful station and a great family to keep it going. When you talk about people making transmitters run, we got the king here. George, how you doing, George? Everything okay?
Everything was okay as we went to air tonight. None of the transmitters were calling me on the phone and complaining. Although I did visit a transmitter site today, not mine, but I'm glad it's not too. I never knew that they made towers that were not galvanized, but I think I found one. Boy, what a mess. Tonight, though, I didn't mention the doghouse. You know, you usually see at the bottom of the tower, little metal box there that has the tuning network in it. The reason I thought of that is because I'm going to go back to the MFJ tuner kit we worked on last week and do some more work on it tonight. But this particular site I visited, yeah, it had one of those boxes at the bottom. They're usually, yard wide or so, something like that. This one had a mailbox. So that should be a clue right there that maybe something's not completely up to standards here. But anyway, Bob, looking forward to catching up with you and some pine board activity tonight.
Well, we've been running around. Got to spend a day or so here with WB6ACU. They're out running around the country again. They've got 80 stops to make. So if the Eagles get close to you, don't miss it. Please don't miss it. What an incredible show. And Joe's right there kicking him in his talk box. Well, we'll be back to you guys. One thing I have to do, I have to mention, there's a great Ham Fest coming up in central Missouri at Mount Vernon, Missouri Ham Fest, Saturday. I wish I could be there, but something else came up again. And W0OAR, and it's the Ozarks Club down in Mount Vernon. And there's the chart on the screen, and you can read about that. Go check it out. It's Saturday, and these are always great fests because they have very good parts and pieces that have a great flea market. And you want to, as I keep telling the guys and gals, if you're building the pine board, this is what you want to do. You want to go visit these places because that's where you fill up your junk box. So the great bunch of guys also in Mount Vernon. Wish I could be there, but we'll have to schedule it for another time. But it's really good to see a lot of these good clubs building. Some of these things are getting more and more people coming, and I think a lot of it has to do with a lot of us are building again. So that's good. Well, speaking of building, I get so many pictures. Oh, man. And some of you guys make me look so bad. Look at this. This is a great picture of a transmitter. And see there, he built the whole thing on one piece, one board. It's all together. Started there, went on down through. And it's just great to see these guys think about what's going on. So I appreciate all the many pictures that we get. And I have a lot of guys and gals will say, well, you know, I got a messy workbench and I don't want to take pictures. Well, check this out. I mean, and he's got to be proud of this. I am proud of a workbench that looks like this. George, I bet you have a workbench that looks something like that, don't you?
Very, very much like that. Yes. It's not quite as clean though.
But see, the deal is if you have a bench and it doesn't have all these parts and all that, you're not doing anything. So you do have to make that happen. I got to show you, this is a wonderful picture. It's not the pine board or building, but this is a great picture of a Central Electronics, the whole bit, the VFO, the 20A, the scope, and he's got one of the civil defense communicators. Wonderful stuff. And of course, 75A4 receiver, Collins. This is all great old stuff. And that's another part of this. You get into the vintage stuff and it is a disease. Trust me. Well, I have had a lot of work I'm doing on the pine board because I got this idea from one of you guys and gals that the pine board would work on 160. And I'm going, really? So I'll show you that in a minute. But I have to answer a few requests. One of them, and we've showed it a couple of times, but one of them wanted to know of the voltages. And so there you are. If you don't have the pine board working, you need to check the voltages. The 6AG7's got 330 volts on the plate. Got about 90, 95 on the screen. And down here on the 6V6, 6L6, whatever one you're using, you got 340 volts on the plate, and you have 250 volts on the screen. And all I can tell you is if you don't have those voltages, and that's again with 350 volts going in, that's the next trick. But If you don't have those voltages, then something's wrong. You have the wrong resistor, they're in the wrong place, that kind of thing. But this is the key right here. Those are the magic circles, five of them. If you have all those going, you should be good to go. And of course, you got to make sure that the crystal's good. And so it's always nice to have spares of these things to check them out. But just check the continuity of, if you don't have the voltage, you'll know the continuity of things are wrong. Take, for instance, that choke. That choke has got to have good continuity, or you won't have 330 up above, that kind of thing. You also want to make sure that your decoupling cap, I always have a couple of them around. There's a decoupling cap right there. On one side of this, you got 330. On the other side is your antenna. Well, that coupling capacitor makes sure you don't have 330 volts on your antenna lead. There is no voltage on that coil. And make sure that coupling cap is good. And that I usually like to use a 1,000 volt. Sometimes I have 2,000 or 3,000 volt caps laying around, and I use that cap, make sure it's good. That decouples your V plus from the antenna. You got to make sure that happens. But I had a couple of guys that they've had some situations and they didn't have the voltage right. So I wanted to let everybody know about that. Once you get that going, you should be okay. I also have had a few people that one of them was Virginia. The transformer was bad, a brand new transformer. And so these are things that you need to check before you even start. Take that transformer. Now, beware, we're dealing with 500 volts here. And I get all these doom and gloomers. Oh, somebody's going to electrocute. No, I want to try to teach you to respect that high voltage. And it doesn't have to be high sometimes. You can do crazy stuff with 12 volts, but just be aware that you're dealing with high voltage and don't touch all these leads. But plug the transformer into 110 volts and see if you have the AC voltage on either side of the center tap and you have 6 volts on the filament. Just check that out first before you do anything else. And that was really kind of a sad thing for Virginia, but we got her cooking. And if you're listening, Virginia, that's going to go out tomorrow. I was hoping that would went out last week, but too much going on here. So those are just some of the things that some of the folks have had, just little crazy stuff, but it all depends on what the voltage is. So what I want to do now, this is going to be crazy. I'm not in my usual place, as you can see, and this is the light's bad and it's echoey, but one of these days I'll tell you what I've been doing. But anyway, we just been running around so much, and I didn't get a chance to go out to the Heil factory to put all this stuff together and be out there tonight. But when I switch to this camera, I think you'll be able to see it. I want to show you what I did and make this thing work on 160. Now, that sounds really crazy, but it works, and works really good. And you use the whole coil. The entire coil will work. What we're going to get into this in the next couple of weeks. When I get back down to Pleasant Hope in a couple of weeks, I'll have all of that laid out for you there and give you all the details of how to make the pine board work on three bands, 160, 75, 80, and 40. And I've got a band switch in it. I'm not quite done with it all, but I hope you can hear me. I'm going to push this over here, and I'm going to switch the camera. As I said, this is the built-in camera. It's not great, but see what we got here. And I'm going to go down here and pick up the old pine board for you. And here we go. And, of course, you recognize this part. Nothing's changed there. the preamp, it doesn't get better. I'm getting really great reports from all of you. You're as stunned as I am how good that preamp is. We're going to do more with it, too. I got plans for an audio amplifier, and I got plans for a guitar amp. That's going to be the front end of it, because what you're looking at is very close to the front end of a Fender Twin amplifier. But here's the newbie. And I extended the board. If I was going to do this from scratch, I'd do it totally different. So don't give me a lot of crap, because it could be done a lot differently. And you guys are doing that. But I just didn't have time, because I did it here at home. I didn't have all my parts. But look what happens. We use that whole MFJ coil, and then it's tapped. So I haven't put the taps on it yet, but it will be there next time you see it. But then the front panel that I made has our load control. But we have this little guy, 160, 75, 40. So it'll be three bands all right there. And you're going to learn a whole lot, because I know you're probably thinking, oh, what an incredible thing to switch. What kind of complicated stuff? It's not complicated. It's a little bitty switch that, by the way, I got it from Antique Supply. I don't have it hooked up, as you can see. But there's the switch right there. It's three position, and it actually has two other poles, so you could put lights on it and all that. I also am thinking about doing that to the crystals so we can switch crystals. So I got a few more things. Once I found out this thing's going to work really well on 160, now we're talking, because we'll have all three bands. Isn't that cool? And it really works great on 160. I couldn't believe it. But I didn't trust myself, I guess. But we're having fun. I'm hearing from just dozens and dozens of you. I'm just so thrilled, because so many guys and gals are building. And there was a very nice article in the correspondence of QST. I got it yesterday. Someone had written complimenting the ARRL and doing the Pine Board project, because you just don't see this kind of stuff, and there should be a lot of it happening. So there you are, and we'll get on down the road. Oh, I have one other note. I'm sorry. I had three different people this week alone, and I guess it's my fault. They want to know what kind of microphone I'm using these days. This is the new PR77D. And a purple one, and we have a black one. And another one asked what kind of microphone was George using. And his is a PR22, which is a terrific microphone for just all kinds of stuff, and especially interview-type things. But this is the new PR77D. Been 2 years in the building, but I'm really proud of it. Now we got broadcasters and all kinds of people after it. So it's starting to be compared to a lot of the big time microphones, and it's outperforming them there. Thank you, Vic. There's a page in the on our page about it. So there, that'll answer those. I think I'm done. So Don, it's all yours, and I bet you get questions all the time, don't you?
I do. I'm reading this letter, as a matter of fact, now from the members here in the latest QST about your Pine Board article. Very good stuff. Yeah, we get all kinds of questions. I get a lot of Pine Board questions, actually, and I just tell them, talk to Bob. Call Bob. He'll pick up if you call Heil Sound, chances are he'll pick up the phone. Such good stuff. Yeah, we get a lot of questions, and we try to answer those questions as best we can about everything that's going on in ham radio in our news program, which we lovingly refer to as Amateur Radio Newsline, that's been around for 4 decades and counting now. Why, say, I think, let's see, if I was to think real hard, I bet we could get some headlines right about now. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2107, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, March 21st, 2018. The Federal Communications Commission has raised concerns about four small experimental satellites that were sent into space from India on January 12th.
The four so-called Space Bees are said to have been among the array of secondary CubeSats aboard the Polar Satellite Launch Vehicle. The FCC said these four satellites were unauthorized by the agency. The four communications satellites are a project of Swarm Technologies, a Silicon Valley startup manufacturer. They were designed to test out an Internet of Things communications network from space by communicating with ground stations and swapping data for as long as 8 years. Swarm's application to operate them from space, however, was rejected by the FCC in December, with the agency citing concerns about their possible collision with other craft in space. The FCC noted that the miniature nature of the Space Bees technology would make them difficult to track to prevent such collisions. In an apparent move against the company, the FCC has since revoked permission it previously gave Swarm for its next four satellites, according to a CNBC report. Those satellites were to have been launched just in a few weeks in April. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Kevin Trotman, N5PRE.
With springtime and warmer weather right around the corner, it's time to reverse some of the wear winter has brought to antennas and towers, and a perfect time for a refresher in tower safety.
With a big storm getting ready to slam New England, William Welsh, K1 IOC of Edgartown, Massachusetts, was only trying to make his ham radio antenna more secure. So he scaled his backyard tower and 20 feet up got his sneaker caught. The electrician, who is 80 years old, was trapped. His wife Betty told the Martha's Vineyard Times that Fire Chief Alex Schaefer was the first to arrive, and a ladder truck showed up soon after. William was caught just below the apex, and a large pine tree was blocking access to him. The firefighters gave him a helmet and a harness, which they fastened to the tower. After a few more maneuvers, he was hoisted safely over the tree to the ground below, where firefighters and EMTs met him, and he was taken by ambulance for observation. His wife told the newspaper later that he was fine and that the incident was, as she called it, a fluke. She said he has been climbing for most of his 80 years. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3 TZD.
Amateur Radio just landed in another popular TV show.
Sure, ham radio can save lives, but that apparently doesn't count if you're a zombie. The March 11th episode of The Walking Dead, a popular American TV show, seemed to try to make that point, at least for the fans who tuned in that night. The episode marked the latest appearance ham radio has made in a TV series, this one being a popular post-apocalyptic drama. Now, here's the story. Two of the show's protagonists, known as Father Gabriel and Carson, discover an abandoned QTH with radio equipment and a script of messages designed to reassure anyone who can copy the operator's signal. The men also find a corpse on the ground, a zombified man who had somehow suffocated. He is presumed to have been the ham radio operator transmitting those messages. Now, while this popular American TV show is about the undead, it's somehow a comfort that the scriptwriters recognize that ham radio is anything but left to the realm of zombies. The fact that the deceased ham was relying on good band conditions tells us this is definitely fiction. Stay tuned. Perhaps there'll be a sequel. Not The Walking Dead, but The Push to Talking Dead. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm the non-zombified Mike Askins, KE5-CXP.
Another reminder that the 2018 nominating period for the Bill Pasternak WA6ITF Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award is open. You'll find full information and the nominating form on our website, www.arnewsline.org. Just look at the top under the YHOTY tab. For the rest of this week's Amateur Radio News, please listen to the full Amateur Radio Newsline report online on a repeater near you or on shortwave radio station WTWW at 9930 and 5085 kilohertz. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Kevin Trotman, N5PRE, Heather Emby, KB3TZD, Mike Askins, KE5CXP, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 7-3, we'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now here's your solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove.
We've just come down from a solar storm that brought aurora all the way down to Germany, and another one's on its way. What does that mean for you? Those stories and more in the news this week. The sun sure is keeping us on our toes this week. We just came down from a solar storm from some fast wind that actually bumped us up to moderate level storm conditions. It brought Aurora clear down to Germany, and it was all over the UK. Now, this week, we actually have a very dark sun. That's because we have a very extended coronal hole that's pretty much taking up the entire solar disk. The good news is that the fast wind from this coronal hole will be slightly slower than what we'd normally expect, because this hole is kind of collapsing in on itself. This means we probably won't get strong storming conditions, maybe just mild storming, or just maybe even unsettled to active conditions, which is good news for amateur radio operators, because it might just give you a little bit of a bump in propagation. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we may have come down from that solar storm of the past couple days, but we are still under the influence of this massive coronal hole that's going to be continuing to rotate through the Earth's strike zone over the next week or so. At high latitudes, NOAA is expecting active to even minor storm conditions with up to a 55% chance of a major storm, and this will continue throughout the week. At mid-latitudes, we're only looking at unsettled to active conditions with about a 25% chance of a minor storm. But again, these conditions will kind of be sporadic through the week. So you aurora photographers, you need to stay on your toes. That's about the best prediction we can give you. But you amateur radio operators and GPS operators, you might actually enjoy some nice conditions, because if we're not storming too strongly, it actually helps you. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, everything is still in the green when it comes to solar flares. We do still have a spotless sun. This does mean that the solar flux is still low. So you amateur radio operators, especially on the day side, you're still having a bit of a problem. Of course, this fast solar wind and some of the solar storming might actually help you a little bit, but overall, you may still be dealing with some issues. However, you GPS operators, especially on the day side, it's all smooth sailing. So the space weather this week remains pretty active. We're going to be bouncing in and out of storm conditions, so you aurora photographers, especially at high latitudes, you could probably get some pretty good shots. You're going to be pretty busy. Now, mid-latitudes, your aurora photographers might be a little bit more frustrated because the aurora is going to be a bit more elusive. But you amateur radio operators and emergency responders, as long as the storming is not too strong, then you should get a bump in propagation that will help communications for you, which is great because you're sure not getting it from the solar flux right now. And you GPS operators, well, as long as you stay clear of the dawn dust terminators and clear of aurora, your GPS should look pretty good. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
Good stuff tonight, Dr. T. Thanks so much for being with us. And I'm telling you, if you don't subscribe to her on Twitter, you're missing out. Seriously missing out. And if you didn't watch Ham Nation last week, you missed out on George starting a build of an MFJ tuner kit. And we're going to have part two of that coming up next after this from ICOM.
Advanced technology for advanced communications. Communicating has never been more fun than with ICOM. From D-Star to SDR, ICOM uses the most advanced technology in their radios. The SDR you've been asking for is here. ICOM's new IC7610 is a high-performance RMDR with the ability to pick out the faintest signals, even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. The new ICOM IC7610 is a direct sampling, software-defined radio that will change the world's definition of a SDR transceiver. RF direct sampling system, 110 RMDR, independent dual receivers, and dual digicell. Whether you're looking to enter the world of D-Star or need a backup D-Star portable for your Go kit, the ID31A Plus is the perfect radio. Easy to operate, the ID31A Plus is available in silver, red, or gold. Worldwide communications, share pictures and text messages, and it's IPX waterproof, compact, lightweight, and tough. Find out more about all the great new ICOM radios. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur today.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation and register to win for some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. While you're there, learn how you can win the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio.
And for March, that new radio is going to be the ID51A Plus 2 VHF UHF D-Star Portable. It's got extended D-Star coverage, terminal mode, and access point mode. You can send and receive pictures and text messages. You can set the transceiver's DR functions from the RSMS1A application on an Android or with a map application. You can see local repeater sites or other DPRS stations on that map application. You can view and export your received history, detailed data on the transceiver's repeater list, import and export the repeater list and your call sign list. Almost anything you'd want to do on a radio, you can now do with the free Android app on the ID51A Plus 2 handheld. A great radio, and someone's going to win it. So go to icomamerica.com/hamnation after this and each episode of Ham Nation and register to win. Sign up, good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America, Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And last week, you know, I started a segment here that actually it's a tuner I built back in 2013. It's an MFJ tuner kit that was a lot of fun to build. And, you know, everybody, well, some folks won't agree with this. Some folks might be here, but, you know, most everybody needs a tuner if you're going to get on HF. It just allows a little more flexibility in matching your antenna to your transceiver. It's also a great first build project. Very simple to build, especially with good instructions. And it's a good way to get started soldering as well. So let's take a look at part two of that tuner kit.
Last week on Smoke and Solder, we began building the MFJ941EK HF antenna tuner kit. We built the RF switching assembly and the meter assembly. This week, we're going to complete the tuner by building the T-network.
We'll mount the inductor and switch assembly, and we want to hold the switch so that it doesn't turn when we do this. And now, we've got two mounts down in here to line up with those two holes and put our screws through to mount this down. We'll want to mount the capacitors, and these are isolated from the chassis as well. All right, so the first thing I'm going to do, I think it's going to be easier if I put this fiber washer up in the hole before I put the capacitor in. And now I'll put the capacitor with the fiber washer in. And now I'll put another one of the 3/4-inch fiber washers on, and then a metal washer, and then the nut. Now, we do the same thing with the antenna capacitor. But this time, we're going to use the Teflon washers. Now I'm going to look carefully to make sure that none of these plates are touching each other. This one here on the end got kind of bent a little bit, so I straightened it back out. Now the top coil here has been isolated from all the rest, and they've given us a couple of leads here. What we're going to do is pull these out and away from the front post here. Now, this post right here is the stator of the capacitor, and we should attach this wire to it. The wire is just a little bit too short, so I'll just make a little jumper to fit that on over. Now we'll do the same thing on this side with the wire that's connected to C1. Once again, we'll check to make sure we're not shorted against that turn there. The wire coming off of C2 here has got to go right here to the rotor on the tuning capacitor. Now we need to install another bus wire from the rotor here of the antenna capacitor up onto the center of the coil here on the top winding. Now I'm not going to wrap it around because those windings are pretty tight there, and I could short out to the one below. Now let's see if that's good and tight there. And nothing shorted out. Now we've got one final connection to make here, and that goes from the looped end at the top of the inductor coil here onto the stator of the transmitter capacitor. Everything looks good. I don't see any shorts on any of the capacitor plates here that are obvious, or the inductor windings, and so we can complete the kit. We've just got a few pieces left to go here. Now, this is mostly hardware stuff. We need to put this link coupler onto the end of the switch here. That's all the way to the left, and so we want that to point at dummy load. Balance line, coax 1, coax 2, coax 2 bypass, coax 1, balance line, dummy load. So I believe we're good there. Fully mesh the transmitter capacitor and fully mesh the antenna capacitors. That means we'll close them all the way to where they're all the way together there. Install the knobs with the pointers at zero. Now we need to find the home position of the selector switch here. So we'll put the knob on there temporarily so we can switch it around. So the way that we can tell when we're at the home position or open position is look at the rear of the switch wafer, and the wiper ring and selector tab should be aligned. There's the wiper tab right here. It goes on over to the ring in the center here. And the selector tab is currently on this position. If you watch when I turn it here, you'll see that little silver tab stick out the side there. That should be lined up with the selector tab. Now we're at a known position, and we should turn our knob here to position A. Now we got two buttons left here. The red one goes on the lamp on off, and the black one goes on our power range switch here. We'll install the cover on the unit later after we've done some testing and calibration.
Now let's take a look at the schematic and see what we've built. The section in white here is what we built last week. Here's the input to the tuner and the directional coupler. The directional coupler is essentially a center tap transformer. The forward and reflected signals are induced into the windings of the transformer. Here's a reflected meter circuit. We can see that diode D1 rectifies the RF signal into a DC voltage. Capacitor C7 just smooths off the ripple. Resistor R3 reduces the level a little bit. And half of switch 2 selects between two potentiometers that are used to calibrate the 6 and 60 watt ranges. The other half of the meter circuit is essentially the same, but for the forward meter. If we look at switch 3, that's the antenna selector, and we can see the top positions of the switch are the bypass mode that simply route the RF straight through to the coax and outputs. The bottom half of the switch routes the signal through the T network. And here's the balance line balun and the meter lamp circuit. The T-network is two capacitors in series with the RF signal, and in between the two is a switched inductor that goes to ground. So here we can vary either capacitor or the inductance of the inductor to adjust the antenna tuning. Now that we've got the tuner complete, next week we'll do the testing and calibration of the unit. If you'd like to build along with us at home, go to mfjenterprises.com and look up the MFJ941EK kit.
And that is a fun kit. We'll test it out, tune it up next week, and because there are some calibrations that need to be done on it. Interesting side note here. I was looking at the chat room during the last part of that there. I noticed Burke asked, what was the round thing in the bottom that went up to the two banana jacks on there? Well, that's a balun. And apparently, Apple does not want you using that word because it will auto-correct it to everything under the sun but balun if you try to type it in. So anyway, fun kit there, MFJ941EK. They put that together just for us here on Smoke and Solder at a request for, you know, some kits that we could build. And that's one that that we came up with. And a great, fun little project there. One that most any ham could use. Well, you know, last week I asked a question here out of Gordo's Extra Class amateur radio guide. Yes, it's the transparent version here. That's actually green, but it's one that Gordo picked out, especially for us. What type of semiconductor device is designed for use as a voltage-controlled capacitor? Is it a variactor diode, a tunnel diode, silicone control rectifier, or a Zener diode? Well, I had hoped that someone would get that one, and sure enough, they did. A lot of folks got it, but we could only have one winner, and by chance in the random drawing there, this week's winner was Dylan Blue, AE6DB. And Dylan said it's a variactor diode. So congratulations, Dylan. You got it right. And we're going to send you one of these Howell Ham Radio Handbooks, second edition, from our friend Bob Howell. A great resource to have on the bench there. All kinds of good material on just common electronics, on building, different amateur radio projects that have been built over the years, antennas, just all kinds of stuff in there. Even some tuners in there, or some phasers, and charts and tables of a lot of good information that you're going to want if you're experimenting in ham radio. So highly recommended, the Howell Ham Radio Handbook, second edition here. For next week, we've got another prize here. This is the MFJ 113 Giant LED clock. It's a 12 or 24 hour alarm clock. Huge display there. You can see this thing from across the room without your glasses on. It's so big. Perfect for the ham shack. And it could be yours. I just got a simple question here. Now, I've only got one, so we'll have to take a drawing of who wins this. Somebody should know the answer to this one, though, because this is something Gordo has brought up several times before. How can you adjust an antenna tuner without transmitting? How can you adjust an antenna tuner without actually transmitting? If you think you know the answer, send it to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you might be next week's lucky winner of that giant LED MFJ clock. And we've got a lot more to go yet, but first, here's Donnie.
I love your smoke and solder stuff, George. I love watching you build stuff. And speaking of building stuff, Tyler is a member of his robotics team, the first robotics team. They've been going to competitions, and they were in Orlando a couple of weeks ago. I told you about that a couple of weeks ago. Well, this week, they're a little closer to home in New Orleans, and my wife Dawn and I are going to be going Saturday to watch the competition. But you can watch it online. Victor has the, there it is, RoboVision OD, RoboVision OD On Demand. That's on YouTube. And if you go and search that out, RoboVision OD On Demand, you'll find live stream, and you'll find videos there of the other, all of the matches. Those were from Orlando. All of the matches and interviews and all kinds of cool stuff. Team Chaos 1421 is Tyler's team. So if you're going to be, have some time, by all means, give it a minute and watch that, because I think you'll really be impressed with what these high school students are doing, building these robots. Here you can see a little bit of the teams working against each other. You've got the Blue Alliance and the Red Alliance, three teams on each, and they're all competing individually, and they're competing with each other as an alliance. So it's just amazing. I'm not sure if I don't see Tyler's in that one, but he's 1421. You see the numbers on the robots. Anyway, go to that RoboVision OD and you'll find it on YouTube this weekend, live from New Orleans. So good luck to Tyler and Team Chaos 1421. I want to talk to you a little bit about something that you may not necessarily want, but it's something that at some point in time you're going to need, and that is a mortgage. And if you're going to get a mortgage, you may as well do it the easiest, most efficient way you can, and that is with Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. The mortgage experience really, it wasn't keeping up with the times. It was old. It was outdated. It was just, it was horrendous. It needed a client-focused technological revolution, and that is why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's very simple. It allows you to fully understand all the details and be confident that you are getting the right mortgage for you. It's convenient. They have trusted partners that allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. It's extremely powerful, whether you're looking to, well, if you're a first-time home buyer or you're buying your 10th home, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds. And based on your income, assets, and credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all of the home loan options for which you qualify and find the one that is just exactly right for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/hamnation. rocketmortgage.com/hamnation. Rocket Mortgage is an equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. And Rocket Mortgage, thank you so much for your help with us tonight on Ham Nation. Time for Val's DX report. She's not with us tonight, as Bob said. She's been suffering with a migraine all day. But we do have a little video piece from her. It's on how to get your radio and computer talking to each other using the MicroHam gear.
Okay, today we're going to talk about bringing your station to the 21st century and interfacing your rig with your computer. So first you're going to need some kind of digital interface. These are the three most popular, your Signalink, your Rig Blaster, or your MicroHam product. These can be found. I listed the stores where you can get them. What I'm going to use is a MicroHam keyer, and here are the cables that were included along with what I had to purchase specific to my radio. Now you're also going to need to download three things. I'm going to have you download Dimensions 4, MicroHam, and N1MM. So first off, let's go in and let's do the downloads for all three software. N1MM is great. It's free. It's a great contesting software. You can use it for field day. You can also put it in DX mode, open up a DX log. I'm going to show you how to do that and just use it for DXing. Now, it's really not a good logging software because you can't confirm if you sent them QSL cards or when they come back, things like that, but it will let you export them as an ADIF file, which you can import into a logging software or put on your QRZ logging software, anything like that. So here we go, and we're going to just download all these software products. So just go in and click this, and that's where you're going to click for your MicroHam interface. Now, once they're fully downloaded, you need to go into your download folder and install them. So we'll go ahead and install them. Now, this Dimensions 4 is a time syncing software. Make sure your computer is synced to the correct clock, especially if you're going to FT8 or contest. You want to make sure your computer is on the right time. This is, and you know, you're just going to have to answer through the things. It's pretty simple. It's going to make you restart, turn off your computer, restart, and turn it on. Obviously, I couldn't record while my computer's restarting. So we're installing the USB router software right now. It's going to ask you to unplug all your USB cables from the MicroHam, and that's because it's going to create virtual serial ports, so you don't want to have any of your USB cables connected. But as soon as you're done installing, make sure you connect that again. Otherwise, nothing will come up when you bring up the icon. These go pretty fast, and it should be fairly easy and self-explanatory. All right, so let's bring up now the MicroHam interface. Now, you're going to make sure your cables are all plugged in, and this is what you get when you bring it up. So you're going to go in and you're going to set up some virtual ports. So I'm going to set up four virtual ports because I have a two VFO radio. So I just set up 1, 2, 3, and 4. And once that's done, then you're going to go in and once that circle's done, you're going to go in and choose one of the ports. Now, it doesn't matter what port you name it, as long as you stay consistent. We're putting the radio on port 1. So when we go into N1MM, we want to make sure we use one for the radio there as well. Same thing with the address. The 8 Echo is what I'm using because it's an ICOM. I picked my radio, and it gave me the 8 Echo for the address. You want to make sure that's the same in both places. See there, I got to change it to an 8 Echo. And now if you go back, it's actually going to be interfacing. I'm going to put on the extra ports for if I want to do RIDI. You can do CW. It'll send CW for you from your computer, things like that, using the WinKey function. So I'm going to set all that up as well. So that's why I'm using 4 ports. And now we'll bring up N1MM. And we're going to create a new database. It's our first time in here. And it's going to tell you all this other stuff, but just punch through it. And then name your new database. Tell you have to set up your station and all that. So I'm going to ask you to name the database. I'm just going to call it New DB, but you can put your call sign in or things like that. Whatever you want to name it. And then we're going to put in our station information. So just type in all your information. Now, if you ever do a contest and you generate a Cabrillo file, this is what's going to be in the top. So this is how it's going to read to the contest robots. So you want to fill that in and put your contest club and put in your CQ zone, your ITU zone, your six-digit grid square. So just fill all that in. I was going to speed this up, but Jerry says I usually do all this stuff double the speed of a normal person anyway, so I didn't bother speeding it up for you. So I can do this stuff in my sleep. I do all this stuff a lot. All right. So now we're going to configure the radio on N1MM. So we're going to choose port 1, go pick our radio. I'm using the 7851, but pretty much every radio is in there. Hit the set button, and it's going to help you through. This is, it'll tell you for your radio what's normal. Like when I mouse over that last field there, see it says 2 is for most other radios, ICOMs are a 1. And then again, you got to make sure you have that 8 Echo in there for your address. So what's most important is everything matches. So if it's, you know, port 1 on the micro key here, it's got to be port 1 on N1MM. So we're going to go ahead and set up those other ones for digital. I've tuned my DTS and my RTS I'm not doing the update, sorry. We'll do it later. And this is going to be for radio 1. I'm going to make sure I have SO2V checked. And then we'll do for radio 2. And same thing with off and off. And then radio 2, because I have 2 VFOs coming in on my radio. And then I'm going to set up the other one for the WinKey, so you can do CW right from your computer. It's really nice. You don't have to have your paddle all the time. And that one's an on and an off, and then that's for both radios, both VFOs, I should say, not radios. And that's good with your configure, and we should be good to go. Next, though, we want to, it's going to open up my second VFO. Sorry, guys. Okay. It's there if in case I need my second VFO, because I could have 2 band plans up, have one of my VFOs on 40 meters and one on 20 meters. It's kind of nice when I have, now you bring up this band plan. This is sweet. This is the sweetest part of interfacing. Okay. Now the radio's talking to the computer through via the microham keyer. So now if I pull up, my telnet, this is going to pull up the cluster. Now, you can go in and set this up and pick any of the clusters that they have already listed there. You'll see this huge amount of clusters listed. But if you don't like those, and maybe you guys have a local cluster that you guys use, you can go ahead and put in that local cluster. Make sure you put in the IP address, and then it will be in that drop-down list for you to choose. So I'm just going to go ahead and pick one of the ones that they have here already. And then I'm going to click for automatic login. So as soon as I bring up my N1MM, it automatically brings me into the cluster. And what's nice about that, all those spots that people are spotting all over the world are going to show up on my band map all the way to the left there. So you'll see them start to roll in. It'll take a little while here, but you know, there goes the spot. So when I go over to my band map and I hit show DX, it'll show my DX. Now, all you have to do is spin your wheel on your mouse to condense what you see or expand what you see. So you see all those spots right there. Those are all spots I can work. We're going to open up a log here. Let's just open up a DX log, and then I'll just do all my DXing right from here. And so you'll know what you need if you have your whole log in here. If you need something, it'll be red. If it's not a new country, but you never worked the guy before, it'll be blue. But if it's red, that's a brand new country for you, as long as your full log is in this log. So it's kind of nice. Now, right from here in that box, I could type in sideband, and it'll go to sideband. CW, it'll automatically switch to CW, just right in that box where you put in the call sign. So I could type in RIDI, I could type in a frequency, it'll change frequency, or band. And then you can just go with your mouse and click on any of those call signs. And then you can just click on that call sign. It puts it in the box for you. It's really easy. You can just keep clicking your mouse and working all those guys. Or you can hit the control up or down arrow on your keyboard, and it'll just move up and down to unworked spots for you, unworked stations. So it's really nice once you're interface. And that's just some of the cool stuff that you can do now that you're online in the 21st century and hooked up. So let's get our clock up and rolling too. We forgot to do that, so let me get her up. And this is great. I use this for every contest. I use this when I FT8 because there it's really important that you have good times. Same thing if you're doing a satellite or anything like that where you have to have exact times. You just pull it up, hit that sync button, and you're synced. You're synced to what everybody else is synced to. So those are the three really cool tools to have up and rolling for you to be interfaced with your radio. So good luck. And I am going to put this video out on my YouTube channel. So if you want to slow it down, rewind, whatever, you'll be able to do that.
She's the greatest. She is the greatest. I'll tell you. You want to work some DX? She's the gal. And I'm sure you already know that if you watch this show or listen to the podcast. She's something, and we appreciate her being here all the time that she takes out of her life to get it all going, because she's a busy lady, and when the contests and the DX comes in, guess where she is. So we're sorry she's not feeling well tonight, but she will be back. She will. Well, we talked about at the top of the show about a very interesting guest, and it's really dear to my heart, because for many years while I started this hobby back in 1956, we didn't have repeaters. It was all simplex. And I was a technician for 17 years working nothing but simplex. But something got away. I think it was called a repeater. And everybody said, oh, well, let's go here. And they didn't need very good antennas or whatever. Well, we're gonna enlighten you to what's still going on in the simplex world, and that's Paul, K4PEW. Paul, it's nice to have you here tonight.
It's great to be here, Bob. It's a thrill to get some national attention through one of the leading men in the amateur radio.
Well, the simplex thing is so interesting. Tell us a little bit about how it started and how many guys you got every night, and if you have nets. How do you work this and frequencies, and tell everybody about what you're doing in good old Tennessee, down the road from Charlie Daniels' home, right?
Well, it's down the road, but he's in a little more upscale community than I am. It started out, really, I started doing simplex when I first got my license in Florida about 15 years ago. And I was a participant in a very large club down there, and I realized that there was a lot of hams who had an inability to even, they didn't get on the air very often unless it was through a repeater. And so I started a simplex net. We had a great situation with an antenna that was about 100 feet in the air on the top of a large hospital. And so those we would get anywhere from 20 to 30 check-ins a night. And we did it not only on 2 meters, but 70 centimeters, 6 meters, and 10 meters. And we had a ball. We did it once a week. Then when I moved up to Western New York and Niagara Falls, I was participating in other simplex nets locally. Had a ball with that because it's friendly and it's fun, and it's all fun and amateur radio. So when I moved to Tennessee, I wasn't very well connected. Tennessee was all new to me. So I realized I had a fantastic elevation here. One of the best hills in Mount Juliet, right here near the, I don't know where the exact top of Mount Juliet is, but I'm in one of the better locations. So I thought, you know, I ought to start a simplex net. I picked a frequency on the simplex part of the band in 2 meters and made an announcement. I hijacked, borrowed a bunch of emails off of QRZ for the Mount Juliet area and told all of these people I was doing a net. Got up on the air and got zero check-ins on the first night. I said, well, this isn't going well. I did it again. I got one or two, and then I did it again. And we built on that over 3.5 years to where we're averaging over 20 check-ins every night. And just got off the air half an hour ago. We had 21 check-ins, which is a pretty average night for us. And that's, you know, giving that we do it twice a week, Wednesdays and Saturdays, it's kind of where, you know, everyone has family obligations, and it's, and other work obligations and just all kinds of other things. Amateur radio is a hobby, as you know. But we don't even have all of our normal check-ins each night. I mean, I would say that there's probably 10 or 15 that aren't checking in just due to other obligations, or they just don't want to check in and they'd rather listen. And that's one of the benefits. That's one of the benefits of Simplex is it's part of the battle is who can I hear? And that's what drives people to do better.
Well, it takes a little bit of little work, and we're going to run into some slides here. We've got some pictures, and maybe tell us a little bit about what we're seeing. That looks like an attic antenna. Go ahead.
Yeah, it is, and that was one of my attempts. I started out with a J-pole in the attic with my simplex then and realized it didn't work too good. And so I said, well, I'll put a beam in the attic since my XYL was averse to putting up an outside antenna. And that worked pretty good until I swung it around into that aluminum, that metal that fiberglass insulation with the metal facing on it. So the SWR changed considerably. That wasn't good enough. So I finally put up a larger, you know, vertical outside on my chimney. And that's a 70 centimeter quad beam I built. That was a lot of work, let me tell you, trying to get those pieces together correctly. But I use that sometimes. And of course, there's part of my station, of course, highlighting one of the best pieces of gear in there. You know which one that is.
Yeah, that's great.
Oh, that's the 96-inch tall 2-meter antenna I have on the back of my car, which is what people think I'm the upgraded Mayberry Police Department car, and that's the vertical I have on my chimney, and that's about the base of that's about 724 feet above sea level, and that puts me where my footprint on the in the area is about 35 to 60 miles depending upon the terrain.
That's nice.
Oh, that's one of our fellas. He's in one of the outlying areas near Watertown, Tennessee. I think you know where that is. And he's got a 60-foot tower. And that thing, it's an owl you can see that's hanging from that 2-meter beam he has pointed in our direction. So he has a ball with that. He's also a very active DXer on the sideband. You can see some of his antennas up there. And that's the 2-meter beam with a fake owl that's supposed to scare off birds. It's and you can see he's trying to get above the trees and the hills there. That's one of the other fellas' systems out there. One I forget which one that is. I don't have that one marked, but one of the fellas you can see he's got a nice Kenwood handheld over on his side and quite nice gear for you know average. I don't remember who that is. That's terrible. I'd give him a shout out if I remembered. Move on to the next one. I hope. Oh yeah, it's one of the fellows in Lebanon. He's got a couple of big beams that he swings around. One of them, I believe, was it was Armstrong beam, Armstrong rotor. Might be that big one. I'm not sure. But you can see that these guys are really working hard to get their signals out because a lot of these people are in relatively rural areas, and they're not so much interested in repeaters, but simplex. So it means you got to work a little harder to do that. And there's one of the others, one of his, this is out in the side of his yard there in the woods, trying to get the, you know, the vertical up pretty high. And he's also got I'm not sure, it's a dipole of some kind, but that's not for the simplex net.
Like a trap 40 meter.
Yeah, it looks like it, yeah. He's one of the other fellas, fairly simple station with a 897D and the built-in tuner. And that's a nice all-mode rig if anybody's ever seen that one. But I think everybody in the world's seen one of those. And that's my favorite. I don't have any of those built yet, but I'm going to have some of those made. I love that meme because it works.
Yeah. It's great.
Okay, that was another homemade little beam that one of the fellows built, trying to improve his station. And it's not really to save money, because it's you can buy a three-element, two-meter beam pretty cheap. In this case, it's he just had fun doing it with PVC and some, I think, welding in this case.
It's all about the satisfaction of making things, and they work. So that's not a big problem. Look like a couple of the guys there are talking it over.
We have a monthly get-together for coffee and breakfast at a local breakfast place. It's a barbecue place, so it's a big attraction here. And we do that every month and get about 12, 13 guys show up every month.
Those are all great. It shows you what it takes. And if you want to do any simplex, I've always said you have to have some gain. You can't just stick up a rubber duck. You need some gain in those antennas. You don't need a lot of amplification, because you can get it from the antenna. That's always been my criteria, especially on VHF, because you can get up to 20 dB of gain just by getting a few elements out in front of you. And you guys are doing that quite well. Well, I bet you have a lot of fun, and I'm sure glad that you're here and telling us all about it. And we want to make sure that everybody knows about where you are. And we showed the your website so they can come and see what's going on there. And we'll be staying in touch with you. We'll come back again in the future and see what else you guys are dreaming up. But I think it's wonderful, because it gives some life to ham radio. It's not just sitting around and gabbing. You guys are doing it. You're building things to make it happen. And I appreciate that very much.
Very good. Thanks for your time, Bob. And appreciate being on the air to help promote Simplex, which we feel is underutilized in the community.
Okay, well, thanks so much. I wish I could be working you guys, but down from the Ozarks, that'd be a little bit tough. Thanks for coming on tonight, Paul. We're going to do it again. We really will. We'll get some more activity going on Simplex, and we'll be back with you. Well, we need to go talk about things happening in Colorado. And Amanda, are you raising chickens? Did you tell me? Is that what you're doing? What's up out there? She's busy. She's really busy. Now she's going to be chasing chickens.
We do things with chickens down here in Mississippi. It involves a crock pot.
Yeah.
Oh, no. These girls are lifestyle. I am a chicken freak.
You know, it's been a year since we started the Pine Board. And how I know that is that remember I went out and bought this egg carton to put parts in, right? Remember that? But the only thing is I bought them. They're only available at Easter, because you got to empty them first. And you know what's in here, buddy? Marshmallow eggs. But it makes a great place to keep your parts all sorted out and stuff like that. But you have those and you put eggs from your chickens. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I have 6 dozen eggs in the fridge right now. And I have become a crazy chicken lady. You know, there's crazy cat ladies. I'm a crazy chicken lady. I love them. They're so cute. And they pick out all the bugs in the garden, and getting 18 of them tomorrow. And when Jeff first mentioned getting into chickens, I thought, you know, if I'm getting chicks in the house, they better cook, clean, and do some laundry around here. But
yeah.
That's awful.
That's a whole different thing right there. Right?
But now I'm a chicken mom. So, all right. I know we're limited on time. So let's get right to it. And let's see. The first question, Bob, I'm going to send this to you. What ballon would you use for an 80 meter loop?
None, because I don't do loops. but you would probably use it depends on what all your feed line is. And I would say the 4-to-1. George, you think that would be the right answer for most of the loops?
Well, I know some people say that, and I have seen, some plans for a full-wave 80-meter loop. I think it's called a loop skywave. They just fed it straight with coax. Mine, I actually have a 1-to-1 ballon on it.
Yeah.
Okay. And I just posted on the chat, DX Engineering has this actually pretty great article talking about balance. And I encourage you all to read it. They really go over some great information, and maybe not everyone agrees with it. And I think everyone has a different opinion about balance and what you should use for a 40 meter dipole to an 80 meter dipole, 4-to-1, 2-to-1, 1-to-1. What do I go? Trial and error, really, a lot. All right, let's move on. I'm sorry, I had this right in front of my face and I missed it. George, you were demonstrating your tuner, and Richard W0RLM wants to know how much power can you use that tuner on? Is it good up to 300 watts?
I believe that is rated at 300 watts. That is actually identical to another tuner that MFJ sells. This is just the same thing in kit form. And you don't save a lot of money by building it as a kit. You get the experience of putting the kit together and doing it yourself. So, yeah, I believe, 300 watts says right there on the webpage.
Isn't that comparable to the 949 tuner? It looks a lot like my 949 inside when you were building it.
I think it is. I don't have that exact one anymore. Actually, I gave that tuner to my son, and he uses it. So,
good tuner.
Yeah, good tuner.
And I also use a tuner, but I love Gordo's demonstration on how to tune your tuner when you have the roller, the inductance and the capacitance, and it's an important lesson to learn how to tune it properly and where to get your wire antennas in check. Let's put it that way. Yeah, all right.
But don't tell it, George, here, because that was my question this week.
Yeah, don't spill the beans.
Okay.
Don't get too detailed here now.
I'm really sorry. I guess I wasn't paying attention to that. I was really into chat tonight. All right. We have an announcement. Gordo wanted us to announce this. The Milwaukee Radio Amateurs Club is having their Ham Fest this Saturday, the 24th. Doors open at 8 a.m. It's at the Elks Club, and there's two clubs putting it on. Anyhow, don't miss it. Evidently, it's a good one and a big one. So hope you can all join that. I also have a little announcement. This was so nice. I've never been invited to Skype with any clubs. And just for that announcement, I want you all to know that all of us hosts here are willing to Skype with your clubs as long as it's not during Ham Nation. And we love to talk about Ham Nation or just ham radio in general. But I am going to be joining the Tri-State Amateur Radio Association of Huntington, West Virginia, Skyping with them sometime in the near future. So, Jerry, there you go. There's your answer. I'm answering it live here on Ham Nation. You said you're all big fans, so I'll be there to join you. Yes, it is. And I know Val loves to do these Skype calls as well. Don, have you done some?
I've done several. They're a lot of fun. I mean, I thoroughly enjoy them. And you know what's cool about Skype is, I mean, it's great to be able to travel to a ham fest and be there live. Oklahoma City flew me in last year, and that was great. But, you know, it's expensive to fly somebody in to do a club meeting or be a guest at a ham fest or something. And Skype, I mean, it's the next best thing to being there because, they can see and hear you, and you can see and hear them. And it's not as good as being there live, but it's the next best thing, and it's free, and that's the best part about it. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Yeah, we love doing that. All of us here do.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a blast, and I'll be picking your brain.
Yeah, that'd be good. You'll have fun doing it. I do about four times five a month, and I love it. I used to fly to all of these, but it got so expensive, as you said, Don. But now with Skype. And the demos, if you're doing any demonstrations and so on, it's beautiful as long as they have a good connection. But Skype is the way to go. And clubs need programming. And this is a great way to do that. So all of us are available to you. Just send us a note and we'll fire it up. Away you go.
Absolutely. And, I obviously take quite an interest in the Aries resources. So I love to talk about Aries and what we do here in Colorado, which we get activated quite a lot. So if anyone's ever interested in that, I'd love to tell you about some of the activations we've had and how we work with our served agencies and how you make those first contacts to an emergency manager or to your sheriff's office and things like that. And it's it can be stressful at first making those relationships, but once you're in there, you'll see it grow big time. So I'd love to help with that stuff, definitely. All right, I had one other question, and I know that this is just going to take too much time tonight, but MD, I am going to address your question next week because we would all love to tell you why we got into amateur radio and what our purpose for getting into amateur radio is. An MD is a college student, I believe, and he or she, not sure which, is getting ready to take their test after their junior year of college, and they wanted to know what were some of the first things they should get into. And we would probably all have different opinions about that. And it also depends on if you're into MCOM or if you're into experimental or if you're just into have some fun on some HF. There's really so many different dramatic ways you could go. We will all give you an opinion, but we have to have more time. So I apologize for that. All
right. We could probably do a whole show on that. We could do a whole show on just that subject probably.
Absolutely. We actually could.
Okay.
Let's go over some nets tonight. We have 7192 for the 40-meter HF net, TAC 311 for the DMR net, 14 Charlie's going strong on the D-Star net, and don't forget Echolink on Dewdrop In. So I will be on at least a couple of those nets tonight, and that's what I've got. Bob, are you wrapping it up tonight?
Good job, yes. And I want to tell everybody something. You know, I'm in our Illinois home, outside of St. Louis, Belleville, and we've been here for years, but I have no radio gear. This room used to be aligned with radio gear. In fact, the first year or so, if you go back on Ham Nation, and this is where it happened, but now it's empty because it's all moved to the Ozarks. I have no radio gear here at all. But what I've been doing is I'm going on WebSDR. If you don't know anything about that, I didn't. How stupid I am, right? WebSDR. There's about six or eight of them around the country, and you can dial up all kinds of things. I'm having more fun listening to some of my buddies out in California and on 75 and 20 or wherever you want to go. Web SDR, try it out. It's really neat. There's a whole bunch of them. There you go. I usually am looking at the one out in Utah. They really have a nice one there. But there's all kinds of them. And you just pick out. You can go listen to one from Russia or one from the UK or there's one from Poland. Really, really neat stuff. So that's what I've been doing lately to listen until I get back to my home where all the radios are. So that's it for tonight. It's really been great. And I'm so glad that we could get to Valerie's report. That was a great thing on connecting your micro ham. And Paul, thanks a lot for telling us about the Simplex thing. So away we go. We'll see you back here next week. And appreciate all of you taking your time to watch Ham Nation, whether live or the replay. Send us letters. Send us emails. Let us know what you need. And we'll try to answer it for you. Till next week, it's K9EID and all of the group here at Ham Nation on the TWIT Network.
Go forth, children, and propagate your signals.